So Dr. Keisha Pollock is an associate professor in the Department of Health Policy and Management at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Dr. Pollock is also a consultant with the Pew Health Impact Project, where she's working to maximize the application of health in all policies for policymaking. And unfortunately, Dr. Erin Wernham was not able to make it due to the storm, and so we're very lucky to have Keisha to take his place. Thank you.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Let me say, I'm not wearing orange because I'm a Giants fan. It just happened to work out that way today. I'm going to ask that every time I'm in office. All right, so as thank you, Jennifer, for that introduction. I'm excited to be here today and send Aaron's regrets from Pew, but I work closely with Aaron, and so I feel very comfortable giving this talk, and I also teach HIA at Johns Hopkins. So thank you for coming this late in the evening before all the social events tonight. So I'm here to start off the session by presenting an overview of health impact assessment to really talk about briefly the state of practice in the field before I turn it over to our speakers who are going to tell us more about the application of HIA. And just want to begin by saying neither Aaron or myself have any disclosures to report. So I think most people who are at this meeting, most people I hope in this room would appreciate that we're really at what we see as a turning point in public health. It is widely recognized that social, economic, political considerations, activity that happens outside of the health sector has impacts on the public's health. And there's actually been a movement to really foster intersectoral collaboration to really try to address health considerations. For example, the National Prevention Council that was formed as part of the Affordable Care Act actually calls for required integration of 17 federal agencies to say you're going to work together, help to think about health. And health is actually, there's language in the bill that says that health should be, that we need to integrate health criteria into decision making across sectors. This is very exciting for us, and it sounds good, right? But really in practice, there are some challenges because how do we actually bring sectors together that oftentimes do not work together? Because there are some challenges. One, there's really no common language. So for all of you who work with transportation engineers, we know that we don't talk about things the same way that they do. Oftentimes, public health professionals don't appreciate and understand the nuances of the planning process and getting permits. And again, it makes it a little challenging as you try to figure out how can you maximize those relationships. There are also few formalized requirements where sectors actually have to come together. And finally, in terms of decision making, we have priorities that just don't match sometimes. So for example, public health might be what we really care passionately about, but it's really one of many considerations that are on the table. Transportation decisions, for example, involve many other considerations in terms of acceptability, funding, what the people say, politics. Again, so all of those factors are part of the decision-making process, and although we care about health, health is one piece of what the decision-makers need to consider. So as we try to operationalize this desire to bring health to the table, to have sectors work together, we have the health impact assessment, which is one way that we're finding to effectively do this in a systematic way. This is the formal definition of health impact assessment from the National Research Council. I'm not going to read it, but you can download the report for free, Improving Health in the United States, that was released in 2011. Practically speaking, HIA is a way to take a systematic look at the health risks and benefits of a proposed policy, project, program in order to really try to maximize those health benefits, minimize those harms, and also develop recommendations that are feasible, that can be implemented, and that speak to the political, cultural climate of which that decision will be made. It's also a way to highlight equity issues and what's happening to vulnerable populations or people who might be affected by that decision. So how do we bring them into the decision-making process? For those of you who are unfamiliar with HIA, this is just an example I'm going to tell you briefly about, just of one way HIA has been applied recently. And this is an HIA that was completed by Megan Sandel from Boston Medical Center, looking at the implementation of a smart grid program in Chicago. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with smart grid, there are these smart meters that have emerged around the country, which is really a way to modernize the U.S. power grid and help to incentivize conservation and improve the reliability of the grid. And so what this HOI looked at was a proposal by Con Ed to implement smart meters in Chicago. It involves a review of the literature that looked at what's called fuel poverty. So individuals who are making choices between whether or not to eat or buy medications and feed their home. So there are these trade-offs that the HIA highlighted. In addition, the review of the literature showed that low-income individuals are already making really tough choices, and pricing and conservation incentives must be implemented with care. Because one of the proposals in this policy was that in the past, there would be an opportunity before your power was cut off for there to be a site visit. And this new proposal said that those decisions could be made remotely, just by a flip of a switch. So clearly, that sort of proposal might impact a certain group disproportionately than another group. The HIA showed that this risk, particularly of this cutoff switch, was particular to the seniors. And again, if you're going to just make a decision to cut off heat without understanding why, there were some challenges related to that. The HIA was actually very successful in terms of the results. The findings were actually entered as testimony to the Illinois Commerce Commission hearings, and the results were so compelling that actually the ICC ordered that site visit needed to stay in the legislation before you can go ahead and disconnect someone's house for non-payment. And actually also the HIA talked about a need to develop metrics and track what was happening to vulnerable populations, and so the utility company was actually also going to embrace that. So there are many examples of HIA. This is just one to give you a sense of how in practice this actually works. So in terms briefly of the field of HIA and its development in the U.S., we can document back as early as 1999 where we think the first HIA-like study was conducted, and that was by the San Francisco Department of Health. It was an HIA of a minimum wage proposal. In 2001, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation funded the first HIA grant. And later on, there's been developed, 2004, there was a big workshop. Andy Dandenberg, who's here, was part of that, to think about how do we advance the field of HIA in the U.S. You'll see the rest of the timeline here. I want to emphasize in 2009, the Health Impact Project was formed, and that is a collaboration between the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and Pew Charitable Trusts. And I'll acknowledge Pamela Russo from RWJF here and Katie with her, I don't, your new married name is, thank you, who is here from Pew as well, so thank you so much. And there's also been other developments. So in 2010, the North American Practice Standards were developed and widely disseminated. And then again, with the Affordable Care Act, we're seeing excitement and energy around HIA at the federal level. So this is the HIA map, similar to that obesity map where we see the spread of the epidemic. Here's the spread of HIA in the U.S., right? So this is 2007, completed HIAs, only 27. So 2009, when the Health Impact Project was founded, we then could document 54 HIAs that were completed. 2012, 116 HIAs have been completed to date, and we have over 200 in progress. So this just shows, I think, the excitement of the field, the growth. I teach an HIA course at Hopkins, which is very popular and continues to get students who are wanting to learn about this tool to be included in your toolkit. When you break it down by sectors, people always ask us, well, where are these HIAs being conducted? Mostly for proposals related to the built environment, so new zoning plans or new development projects. Several HIAs have been applied to transportation as well and housing, and you'll see several in the natural resources and energy, particularly some work Aaron's done in Alaska and in the oil and gas industry. When you take a step back and think, you might be saying to yourself, well, the growth of HIA seems to have been really rapid over the last decade. And I think there's one critical factor that's helping to drive this. There are many, but there's one I really want to emphasize that I haven't talked about yet, and that's the role of community demand. What makes HIA different from other tools is the role and the critical involvement of stakeholders. So bringing into the group all the stakeholders that are in support and against the issues, but getting their perspectives to come to the table. And what we're seeing with HIA is that their communities are demanding that we consider help and consider what's happening to them when decisions are being made. So for example, there are HIAs that you can look at where public housing tenants, for example, really brought these issues to the forefront, where something's happening in your community and folks are raising these health concerns. There are plenty of examples from low-income communities related to urban design or safety types of concerns that come to the front, proposals affecting low-wage workers, resource extraction in American Indian tribes. Again, these are all types of initiatives going on outside the health sector where we can bring health considerations to the table with the tool called Health Impact Assessment. So in summary, again, my job today was just to give an overview before I turn it over to my colleagues to talk about the application of HIA in three different areas. I want to just emphasize that I am really excited about the growth of HIA. It's a diverse, growing practice. HIAs have been conducted at all levels, so local, state, tribal, federal decisions. We also know they're being conducted by many people, so there's definitely a lot of effort to build capacity. So we have community agencies, nonprofits, government, private sector even, non-health agencies doing HIAs, being trained around the country. Who's paying for this? A large portion of HIAs are grant-funded. Several foundations, I already mentioned the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, but there are other foundations that are also funding HIAs. I think one of the challenges for the field, and we'll hear more about this, is that there are few HIA-specific laws and regulations. And so how do we then try to find opportunities to integrate HIA into decisions we're already making or new opportunities that maybe to institutionalize HIA or require it when it makes sense? And finally, we know that some HIAs are integrated into environmental impact assessments, which requires consideration of health, but there's a belief that we can do better in terms of really highlighting an array of health impacts, not just focusing more narrowly, which we often see in environmental impact assessments. So with that, this is Erin's contact information at the Health Impact Project. I'm happy to take questions after the session's over. I spend time at the Health Impact Project, and there are other folks in the room who work there as well who can respond to any questions. So I will end my time and say thank you very much for your attention.